6 weeks ago, a man died. Jumped through a six-story window with a sheet tied around his neck. Well, he didn't leave much behind. But he did have a climate-controlled storage locker filled with old vinyl records. Thousands of them. You're always sneaking
out late. Welcome to Nocturnal Journal on WGN 720. And we're here with Scott Smith, director, screenwriter of the film Chasing the Blues. Thank you so much for coming in. This is right Absolutely. Up my alley.
Awesome.
This movie about record collecting and the passion of record collectors. And tell me about it and the world premiere at the film festival. So, yeah, tell us.
Yeah, well, it was based on a short story by Kevin Guilfoyle. And it was about these two record collectors who were trying to con each other as well as con this old lady that they found was in possession of this mythical blues album on the South Side. And we just, we follow them through this journey. And it's dark and it's comedic and it's fun.
How did it come to you?
My producing partner, John Fromstein, was reading it in an anthology of blues shorts that took place in Chicago. And he read it. Loved it, and he said, "Oh, we should make a short film about this." He sent it to me, and I looked at it, and I was like, just saw, you know, beyond that, and thought this would be an amazing feature, just because the characters were super rich, the subject matter, you know, is great. There's so much passion in music, and it felt like a great, you know, great setup, a lot of tension. And
are you a record collector?
I have a lot of records. I don't know that I would call myself a collector, because I kind of buy for, you know, for what I like, but it's pretty vast. Yeah.
So tell the listeners, I mean, this is a period, the records from the 1930s. I'm kind of a record geek, so I kind of want to zero in on the motif here. It's a 1930s record without giving too much away.
Sure. Yeah. These guys in particular are blues record collectors. Yeah. So it's very specific to that. And, there is this myth about this record that was out there called "Oh, Death Where's Thy Sting" by a artist named Jimmy Kane Baldwin, and there's a myth that goes along with it, like I said, and one of them stumbles upon this in the collection of this old lady I was telling you about, and
she's living down in Hyde Park.
And so it's their quest to, one, listen to the record, and, you know, two, to possess it. So there's the whole thing about, you know, keeping another one, from having it. And, there's a whole rivalry going on there.
You know, I watched it last night and it's really got a measured, I'm not a film critic, I'm a record collector, but it's really got a measured build to it. It really kind of keeps you in, but it's really, really got a measured build. That's what I wrote in my notes. You know what I mean?
Good. Yeah. It keeps you engaged because you want to know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And the two guys are the main characters, Grant and Ron Connor, are incredibly engaging, and they work so well together, and it was really fun with them.
Like I said, I go to a lot of record stores, and I have a collection. I think one of the key things I found in some aspects of the record community, and it's a line in your movie, is the chase was all that I had.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I mean, some of this gets... Did you spend any time in record stores in researching this? I mean, that really hit home with me because I don't want to say they're lonely, but it's really can get obsessive to collect records.
Yeah. No, I mean, I guess I can relate from the obsession part of the records, just from a sense of, being in a record store, imagining, you know, what this is like, what it sounds like. And it's an emotional experience for a lot of people, you know, who are into that kind of music or any music at all. And part of it, I really wanted to, you know, emphasize that, you know, not a negative obsession, but an obsession that's, you know, sort of beautiful, actually.
Had you done any, I know you've done other films, have you done anything like this?
Have not. I've just kind of like, you know, written stuff about music just, you know, for myself and such, but this is really the only thing that was specifically about music that we've, you know, that I've shot.
You've got a background. Tell us about your background. It's also in advertising.
Yeah, I come from the advertising world. I've been creative director for like over 20 years, and I'm at Leo Burnett. And I got into, you know, filmmaking, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago, just out of curiosity. And I was on the set of so many commercials with so many great directors because, you know, the companies that we worked with were Fortune 100 companies. And so anyway, so I learned a lot from these directors. And at one point I was like, well, you know, I wonder what that'd be like. So I did a couple spec commercials for myself and I enjoyed it. And then finally a short film and I really enjoyed it. And then it got picked up by Project Greenlight, which was a competition years ago, the third season. And I ended up being one of the top three director finalists in that. So I just kept going from there and it has evolved to finally, you know, this feature, which has been awesome.
And the world premiere of this will be again. How does that sound to you?
That sounds pretty cool. I'm very grateful.
October 14th.
October 14th at 8:45 Saturday.
And where will that be at?
That's at AMC 21.
River East.
River East.
Yeah. So the 14th then airs again. It'll be screened again on the 18th and the 21st.
Yeah. The 18th, it's at it's a Wednesday at 5:45. And then the 21st, Saturday, it's at 12:30 in the afternoon.
Were there any parallels in writing and screen, you know, writing for the advertising community and screenwriting? I'm talking in terms of economy. I'm talking in terms of detail and stuff like that. Are they two separate worlds?
No. I mean, they're both storytelling.
Yeah. Right.
You know, with advertising, you have 30 seconds to tell the story. And you also have to be, you know, pretty visual from the sense of engaging people, you know, who are watching. And I think it definitely helps me with screenwriting. Just from a brevity standpoint, and you have to tell a story quickly, you know. So in other words, you're watching a scene, and you need to kind of know what's going on, even with the sound off, you know. But I, you know, I like dialogue, so
yeah.
I just like to do that as well.
I noticed you have some of our friends of Nocturnal Journal and friends, yeah. Gene Barge, executive producer. Tell us about Gene.
Yeah, and, well, John got Gene involved a little while ago, just from an authenticity of the blues, and you know, obviously he's been around forever, been with everybody,
and he's done film himself.
Oh right, yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
tell us who Gene is. For, I mean, the Chess Records guy, and yeah.
Yeah, and
Daddy
Big
Gene.
Daddy
and
G.
Yeah.
And he was with, yeah, he played with the Rolling Stones for, didn't he? I think he toured with them for a little while. So John got hooked up with Gene, and we met with him, and, you know, he lended his name. We talked to him about the film. And then he took a crack at writing something for us, and which we filmed, and it's actually, I think it's still on our website.
What was it? What was it they wrote?
It was based on, I think it was probably Pat's lyrics.
Oh, okay.
I'll have to, you know, I feel really lame right now, but I don't remember if it's still up on the site or not. But I'll have to check. But we did a little video of him.
Oh, really?
Recording it in the studio and with his guys. It was really cool.
Pat Brennan, he added, I know Pat.
Yeah, well, I actually don't know Pat. He's a friend of Kevin Guilfoyle's. The story that I hear is that he had this song, and Kevin heard it and loved the title of the song, and so it inspired him to write the short, which the title was "Oh, Death, Where Is Thy Sting?" And so Kevin, you know, took it off of that, and you know, here we are with a movie premiering.
How'd you get John Lovitz in there? He plays kind of a—I don't want to give it too much. It reminded me of a little bit of a Huey Long type guy.
Yeah, he's kind of
he's great.
Yeah, he was really good. Yeah. It was really fun working with him, and he's, you know, he's a really serious actor. He showed interest in the film. An agent had sent it to him, and unexpectedly, you know, we got a call that said, "Hey, you know, John Lovitz just read this. You know, wants to talk to you about this character," And so I was like, John Lovitz, huh? Okay. You know, because I didn't think about him for that role. And as the more I thought about it, I was like, well, we could really shape this in a certain way. And so then when I talked to him, he had a couple ideas. I had, you know, and I still had the ideas from the character. And so we kind of meshed some of that stuff and it came out, he's like creepily funny.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. It's just, and a villain.
It just got such a nice nuance to it.
I think
the film really does. You know,
thank you.
A couple things I want to bring up and then we can go over everything and give the website and all that.
Yeah.
Another concept thing I picked up on it was there's a line in there about stealing records from the black community,
right,
trying to possess what they can't create. I did a book a couple years ago on soul food and the civil rights movement.
Mm.
And there was a movement. I always wanted to do a segment on the radio show on this. We haven't gotten around to it. But there was a movement in D.C. that was really popular at the time I was researching the book. I put a couple restaurants in D.C. in my book. And one was Marvin, and it was based on Marvin Gaye. And his family signed off on it.
Right.
It was okay and stuff. But it was a bunch of young white entrepreneurs and there was who started it. And there was a, at that time, there was a movement around D.C. They had Marvin, mm-hmm. and they had a condo development around the corner called the Ellington, Duke Ellington.
Oh.
So there was this whole thing there called swaggerjacking. And it was a whole controversy about how white people were stealing black people's culture and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the ownership of these black records, I don't know if I'm reading too much into it.
No.
I thought that was a real interesting point you guys brought up.
No, it was intentional because part of the tension, as I was mentioning before, is the fact that, you know, passion is passion. You know, obsession is obsession, and you feel about music or you feel about anything the way you feel about it doesn't matter, you know, really what your culture is. So I really wanted to play off that, you know, that tension between the two characters, one's black and one's white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the white guy is just like, what are you even talking about? You know, he can't understand it.
Yeah.
But the black guy is just, I mean, he's been living it, you know, and he owns a record store and he's a part of it. So I really wanted to kind of play up that, you know, just bring that question up like you were talking about.
Yeah.
Because something I don't think people really think about that much.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I did that book 2 or 3 years ago.
Wow.
Things are quite different now.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately.
And have you ever had, my notes here, have you ever had a baby beef liver casserole?
Have not.
Okay, where did that come from?
We were searching. I think that actually came from Anna Marie Hosford, who was played Mrs. Walker. I think we were looking for a very specific dish that would be served. And Ron, the you know, one of the main characters who was playing Paul, knew of it as well. And so we're just like, that's got to be it then. Because I've never heard of it. It doesn't even sound like I'd want to taste it.
Right.
But they were into it, so I loved it.
It's the type of detail that makes this film sing. It really does. Last thing. I mean, what's it like? It was shot in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't shoot in Taylorville.
No, unfortunately.
But Fulton Market Films, what's the climate like for people trying to do what you're doing here in Chicago?
Well, I think, you know, with the prevalence of a lot of the TV stuff coming in, you know, fortunately it's been employing a lot of crew, which has been awesome. Film, I think, is picking up some. It's still never easy. You know, mainly because it's so dependent on fundraising and money, and you can't do anything, you know, without money. And the beautiful thing about Chicago is the crews are amazing. You know, it's almost, in my mind, it's a great secret. You know what I mean? Because everybody here kind of is in it for the love of it. You know what I mean? So there's a little extra push, and everybody's proud of each other because, you know, we're making a name for Chicago. So that's the cool part, you know, but the challenges are always getting the funding and do you have enough and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, and there's a lot of outlets now for distribution. So yeah. I think there's going to be more coming as well.
What was your source music for this? You used original music and
We did. As we were writing it, you know, there was opportunity to bring stuff in, like the radio playing in the record store. He's in Alan, one of the characters is in a car. So, you know, what cassette tape would he be listening to? Because it was the 80s.
Yeah.
So there were opportunities that lent themselves organically to the music. And so I wanted to really, you know, listen to stuff and really put particular stuff in particular areas. And outside of that, you know, we were able to just have like some transition music as well. And so we kept it in that genre, as well as there was original music by a guy named The Bones of J.R. Jones.
Yeah, I saw that.
Who did a great job. It was amazing. You'd think he was a 90-year-old black guy, but he's like a 20-something-year-old white guy. And his music is great. And as we integrated that with, you know, the stuff from 30s and 40s, it felt kind of seamless.
It's a great film.
Thank you.
Chasing the Blues. Give us the details again, when people can see it, and do the website too.
So. Yeah, chasingtheblues.com. And it's going to be its world premiere at the Chicago International Film Festival on Saturday, October 14th at 8:45. And everything is on the, you know, on the Chicago Film Festival website as well for schedule.
Fulton Market Films.
Fulton Market Films.
Well, thanks for coming down.
Well, I appreciate it.
And
thank you so much.
Good luck with Chasing the Blues.
Thank you.